All right, there we go. So the Buddha, when he first studied meditation, he would go on and study with wonderful yogis like Ramaputra, Tilakalamas, Hindu practitioners, Brahmins, and he really got a wealth of wisdom and took from these traditions the meditation technique, but his sole, I think, reservation not only was a couple of philosophical points in terms of, or psychological points, I should say, but also he found that when the meditation was over in these traditions, there would be a return of stress. And he found the sort of agitation of the neurotic mind coming back at the end of the meditation was back in the world. And this happens very often to us when we're on a trip or a vacation or we're on a retreat or we go away and we step away from our lives and we feel very, very at ease and comfortable and we're no longer wrapped up in our narratives about where we're going and all the struggles in our life and all the dramas that we have to deal with at work and the interpersonal challenges and the issues with our families and relationships and all the stuff of our lives we can step back from when we're on a retreat or when we're at the beach or when we're lying in a hammock in the mountains or just away. And just like a wonderful meditation, this can be extremely peaceful, but then when we come back to our lives, it's amazing how quickly we can get sucked back into the dramas at work. The dramas of, you know, the little battles we have in friendships or relationships or family members or the little senses of disappointments we have maybe with the places we live or the conditions we live in or the city or the neighborhood or whatever. So there's the mind, which was so present and so filled with ease and not caught up in stories that and dramas, suddenly gets sucked back in. And suddenly the stress and the suffering and the disappointment and the frustration, all these things that the Buddha called dukkha, they start up again. And it can be this great sense of dismay, especially if we're coming back from a retreat. Like, well, it didn't work. You know, that's not fair. I paid money for that retreat. I spent a lot of money on that beach vacation, and I wanted more than just, you know, a week out of that. I expected to not give a shit about work for at least a few more weeks. I read this wonderful story about this guy who had was given a diagnosis of an inoperable brain tumor, and he wrote that suddenly his life got a hell of a lot better because he stopped giving a shit about the stuff that people were getting all worked up about. The things that everybody thought was going to, you know, really be really deeply important in the future, he couldn't care less about. The stuff that people said was really, you know, really important that could fundamentally change life, he couldn't care less about. When people said stuff about him, he didn't care. Because, well, he was going to die. He didn't care. Well, of course, the story continues that he was given a misdiagnosis. And he wrote that after he got the misdiagnosis, he got into a taxi cab and within 10 minutes was getting into a heated argument with the cab driver about what was the best way to go downtown. His sense of peace and ease and what was important suddenly got completely thrown askew by the idea that, oh, the way downtown was really important and could make him late, and being late for a meeting was now going to be important in the future. When we're on vacation, a couple of things happen. We don't take the experience of what's happening right now when we're lying in a hammock or sitting in a beach chair or on a retreat in a, you know, in the country in a cushion. We don't take the experiences as being like they're going to shape deeply our future. We don't think of the waves of the ocean as being anything more than pleasant sensations. And we relax the body. We're not resisting what's happening. We feel the breeze of the summer in the mountains, or the sounds of the waves, and the feel of the beach, the sun, or wherever we are, the sound of the crickets in the country. There's this sense of just relaxing the body. There's not this tensing against what's happening, needing to get through this moment so we can get somewhere else more important. And we don't take each moment as something we bring a lot of storytelling about into it. We're not bringing all these stories about, well, this is going to change my future, or this is something deeply personal about me, the sounds of the beach. So there's this great sense of not bringing in narratives and stories, and not resisting, and not expecting this moment to have a huge resounding import into the rest of our lives. There's just an easing, a relaxing into what's happening without expecting anything of deep drama or importance to occur. We're just allowing the present to be. And of course, when we get then sucked back into our lives, what happens? Well, according to the Buddha, we flow back into this process of building stress. And it happens very simply. We begin to believe that the things that we're experiencing, they can play out deep into the future and change our lives. Even little things. Not being able to find our keys for a moment, or being incapable of reaching somebody on the phone, or having somebody at work say something we don't approve of, or having somebody say something snarky about a post on Facebook, or whatever it is. These things, they just aren't the passing inconveniences of life. They become symptoms that we thread together. We bring stories of how difficult life has been, and we add these latest bits of evidence in. So we're no longer just experiencing them. We're doing what the Buddha called upadana. We're attaching them to larger and larger stories. And the more we bring expectations and stories about the past and beliefs that this stuff that we're experiencing is really so important and dramatic, and we resist it, or we cling to it, and we build it up. This process of upadana, eventually, the Buddha says, then turns into a process, finally, where the most suffering comes in, which is called bhava, or identification. We really identify with what we're going through. We identify with the views and opinions and the stories we carry around, and we say, that's really who I am. So when I'm on a beach, or when I'm on vacation in the mountains, or when I'm just on a holiday and I'm just experiencing life, I'm not bringing all these stories about maybe previous vacations and comparing it and think, oh, this breeze that I'm in on the hammock right now, this is really deeply important. This is going to change everything. This is, you know, who I am, this moment. We're just easing into it. But the moment we're back into life and somebody gives us a hostile look at work, we can think, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. And then I'm not going to be able to pay the rent. And then this whole thing about who I am, this is my life, this job. This is where I get, suddenly all the future becomes at stake because somebody gives us a glance that we don't like. Or we hear somebody says something about us that we don't appreciate. Or we're worried that people are doing things and we're not involved. Or whatever it is, but we add all these stories and expectations about the future and attach it to all these previous experiences, and we're no longer just in the present allowing difficulties to arise and pass. We're now making them so much worse by adding all these dramas, all these narratives. The Buddha said that we really take a couple of things in particular very, very personally and attach to them deeply and build up a lot of stress. The first is our bodies, what we look like, how we appear. We deeply suffer with aging. We deeply want to look young and healthy and tanned and pretty. We want to look good. We want to present well. We want people to like the shell, even though we really don't have that much control over the shell. It changes whether we like it or not. The bones, the skin, everything feels the effects of gravity. It's a raw deal, but we have to live it. But we still take it very personally. The gray hairs, the sense of not being as vigorous. We identify with the body very strongly, and when we do, we suffer. Because every time we identify, we shrink our awareness. Every time we cling and we add stories, what we're doing is we're abandoning something else. If I'm telling a story about the fact that I'm looking older, or about the fact that somebody's saying something about me I don't like, or I'm having a difficult day, while I'm telling that story, I'm not aware of other things. I'm not aware of the sensations of my body inside. I'm not aware of the feelings that I'm going through. I'm not aware of what mood I'm in. I'm just fixated on this story. Another thing we tend to add clinging and identification to is our deep feelings and our emotional states. We tend to very often identify with a single characteristic that we think states who we are. People used to would call me up and say, I'm an angry person, or I'm an unhappy person, I'm a sad person. And the answer is invariably, if you're not angry right now when you're on the phone with me, which they invariably weren't, all it means is that there's somebody, they are capable of anger, they're capable of sadness, but it doesn't define who they are. If I say I'm an angry person, that means I'm angry all the time. If it's just a mood that I go through, along with other moods, it's not who I am. It's a trait, maybe, but it's not an identity. The problem, the Buddha said, with going from traits or habits that we have and building full-blown identities is the more we identify and say, that's who I am, the more we limit ourselves to it. If I believe I'm an angry person, when something difficult happens, I bring anger to it because that's what I expect from myself. Something happens that's frustrating. Oh my God, I can't find my keys. I'm locked out of my house. What should I feel? Anger, because I'm an angry person. I bring the expectation that that's what I should be feeling right now, and I summon it all up. I fall into that body state. I fall into the thoughts. The stories we carry about ourselves turn into how we really behave. We become trapped by them. Our expectations of who we are become limitations. We don't allow ourselves to notice the times when something frustrating happens and we don't become angry or sad or disappointed. We just deal with it. we don't notice all the times when somebody says something difficult, and we just shrug it off. It's very important to focus on all of the experiences and not cling or identify with just a few of them. Because the more we see the expanse of what we're possible of, the less we fall into this narrow identification story that causes so much stress and suffering. It also gives us permission to be human. If I tell very positive stories about myself, that's fine. But if I turn them into identities, if I say, oh, I'm a clever person, well, it can be aspirational if it's just a trait. But if it becomes an identity, then I'm going to suffer every time I say something really stupid. And believe me, I can say some dingers. I can have some really incredibly stupid thoughts. On Mother's Day, I was riding my bike down, and earlier in the day, I said, oh, it's Mother's Day, blah, blah, blah. And then I was riding my bike, and I saw all these women walking around with their mothers, and I said to myself, oh, that's strange. All these women are walking around with their mothers. I wonder why. No more than 10 minutes after. Now, if I react to that and go, oh, my God, I'm an idiot, and turn that into an identity, then I suffer too. So if I have the story, oh, I'm so clever and insightful, and I have an incredibly stupid thought, then I suffer. And then if I react to the strong emotion of, ugh, I can't believe it, I'm an idiot, then I suffer too. The more I just step back and just say, oh, I'm capable of this as well. It's just another facet. It's not who I am. It's just another mosaic, as they say, or tile in the mosaic. There's so much less suffering there. Now, of course, the inevitable question comes up. Sometimes it's helpful to have a sense of some stories about ourselves. It's helpful for me to know that I can't drink alcohol safely. But the more I turn that into a fixed identity and say, I'm an alcoholic and I'm unlike everybody who can drink, that creates suffering, it creates separation, it creates distance. All I need to know is that I can't drink. Another thing, I don't swim very well. If I fall from a boat, I'm going to drown eventually. I can paddle around frantically like, you know, a dog for about 5 minutes at most, and then I'm going down. That's a good thing to know, right? You know, I don't want to dive off of a boat. I do have allergies. I'm not particularly very good in any kind of altercation. In my younger lives, when friends were attacked, I'd try to get in there and protect people and get my ass kicked immediately. I was no use to anyone. I'm best as a peacemaker or somebody, you know, trying to figure out something other, but the moment I'm trying to, you know, you can just tell from these moments. I'm no good. So there is certain stories that are worse. But the problem is when it becomes an identity, then it becomes something limited. For example, with the swimming. I told so fiercely the fact that I don't swim very well for so long that I just avoided it. And in the last trip I went on, I just started doing it. And I loved it. But for a very long time, it became a very limiting, a very constraining story that I told about myself. The story of I'm a musician, where people tell, I'm a musician, or I'm an artist. It's fine if it empowers us to do music and art, but the moment it becomes something that causes suffering, we identify with it, and we begin to become disappointed that we're not making our music, or that we're not making our art, or that people are not recognizing me as a musician or an artist, that they're experiencing me as a waiter or whatever, then that's suffering. So you can see, it's one thing to carry around a sort of a bit of self-knowledge, but it's another thing to build it into an identity that doesn't allow for change or mutability or expansion and contraction. So the final question becomes, how do we get out of this habit of identifying and bringing stories in and weaving our present experience and our present feelings into these larger self or psychiatry, the Buddha called it, self stories? A couple things. The first is to really stay present with the feelings that we're experiencing in the body. Right now, we're all experiencing something. We're all experiencing maybe tired or a sense of anticipation of the end of the three-day weekend or the evening settling on. Maybe it's a tinge of hunger or a tinge of tiredness. So whatever we're experiencing, we feel the texture right now. We don't get so caught up in adding stories about what's happening externally that we lose the awareness of the body texture, the texture of the breath, how the mind feels, what mood I'm in, I stay aware of. I become aware of all of the different ingredients to this moment so I don't get sucked up into the story. I remind myself constantly that whatever I'm experiencing, it's not personal. Everybody experiences the same feelings, the same frustrations. So I don't need to weave my experiences into stories about me, my grand inner autobiography. If I get locked out of my house, it's not, oh, what an idiot Josh is. Or if I do something well, if I design something that looks nice, it doesn't become the grand brilliance of Josh. It simply becomes, ooh, that felt good. Or, ooh, this feels shitty, being locked out. In other words, we feel the feelings of the present moment, but stay back and keep a very wary eye from when we start threading the present into these larger stories about what life means and how important this moment we believe it'll be. And in other words, we start not being fully present and we start bringing in narratives. That's where the clinging, the identification, the suffering begins. Because as the Buddha said, every difficult experience passes unless we start weaving it into a larger story. Those stories we can carry around forever. I'll close with this story. My father and myself and my sister, my family was in Buddhist therapy for a long time. I grew up in a Buddhist family where Buddhism was practiced, and at one point we all went into therapy with a monk together. Years ago. And my father, at one point, he was 80 years old, and he said something really cruel to me and my sister. And the therapist, who in his robes turned to my dad and he said, well, why would you say that? And my dad, scurrying up for a reason, said, well, I've felt unloved all my life, and I realize I must have said that because my mother didn't love me. And Bob, the therapist, said, well, Bill, you're 80 years old. How long are you going to carry around this story? And my dad said, well, I've been carrying it around for 70 years. I guess I'm going to carry it around into the grave. But we can do that. We can carry around these stories about how unfair life is, how difficult it's been, how unique we are, how all these resistances and these expectations that we bring in, how poor we've been, how unlooked after, how unloved or unaccepted. And we carry these stories and we pluck any little difficult experience and we add it in to give the story more energy, give ourselves more belief into it, and we create more suffering. So the trick is to experience life, but to always keep the embodied awareness of what's going on right now. By grounding the mind and the body, we're getting ourselves some distance from these narratives. And the more distance we have, the more of a choice we have. So I thank you for listening. Hope you got something from it. Now we need a brave volunteer to ask a question about either the meditation or tonight's talk, or just share about anything. Hi.